Welcome to BrandonVaught.com, where today I'm interviewing Trent Horn. Trent holds a master's degree in theology from the Franciscan University of Steubenville, and he's a well-known speaker, writer, and blogger. He specializes in helping pro-life advocates dialogue intelligently and charitably with pro-choice advocates, and also speaking on the reasons for God's existence, how we can know through logic and reason that God exists. Trent recently came out with an excellent new book called Answering Atheism, How to Make the Case for God with Logic and Charity. The book is probably the definitive Catholic resource now on answering atheism, and it's a tour de force. Trent handles all of the most popular arguments for atheism before constructing a positive case for God based on reason and common sense. It's extremely well-researched with over 70 pages of endnotes and several helpful appendices, and it strikes the right balance between sophisticated philosophy and easier to understand real-world examples. Trent packed the book with many memorable illustrations and even some fictional dialogues between Catholics and atheists, so you can apply these arguments and see how they work in the real world. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we begin, Trent, I want to thank you for joining me. As you know, I'm a longtime admirer of your work, and so I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. So welcome.
Well, it's good to be here, Brandon. I've definitely also enjoyed your work, and I've also really enjoyed participating in your other website, Strange Notions, and really having Catholics having an opportunity to reach out to atheists and those who are considering atheism. I think that's a field we as Catholics have neglected for too long, and so that's why I was motivated to write the book and really help engage Catholics to do this.
I totally agree. I've found that in my experience, many atheists and agnostics, and particularly those who were perhaps raised in a Catholic home, were never exposed to the rich and sophisticated arguments for God that fill our Catholic tradition. And so what I'd like to do in this interview is to focus on two of those arguments, two that you devote many pages to in your book. One of them is the argument from contingency, and the other is the moral argument. Now, you devote dozens of pages to each of these in your book, and so we can't cover all the nuances, but I'd like to offer viewers just a cursory introduction to each of these powerful arguments and show how they work in the real world. And so, to begin, let's start off with that first one. What is the argument from contingency? How does it run?
Sure. Now, some listeners may be put off by the word contingent and not know what it refers to. But something is contingent when it doesn't have to exist, when it could fail to exist, or when it could be different. So you might say that my plans to go to lunch this afternoon are contingent upon me getting my work done in the morning. So the plans for lunch could fail if other conditions don't arise. So that's what it means to be contingent. It means it could be different, or more classically, a contingent thing can fail to exist. Now, this is in contrast to a necessary thing. A necessary fact or being cannot fail to exist. So we say, for example, the three sides of a triangle are necessary to what it means to be a triangle. If a shape doesn't have three sides, it can't be a triangle. God is necessary, which means he can't fail to exist. So the contingency argument goes like this. Whatever exists has an explanation, either in its own nature or in something outside of it. The universe exists and has no explanation in its own nature. So the universe has an explanation outside of its own nature, and that explanation must be a being that can explain itself, or God. So that's kind of, if you put it as premises in an argument, I sometimes summarize it this way. Either the universe has no explanation, it explains itself, or it's explained by a being that explains itself, which would be God. And so that's essentially the argument. And what the defender of theism does is they show that the universe, well, first they would show that things require an explanation. This is called the principle of sufficient reason. That even if the universe were eternal, that doesn't get atheists off the hook, because even if there's an eternal universe, we can still ask the question, why is there something rather than nothing? We expect things to have an explanation even if they were eternal. So for example, if you came across an eternal fork, you might ask, well, why is this eternal fork around? Why isn't it a spoon? Why has it never gone out of existence? And we can ask the same thing of the universe. And then the defender of the argument would show that the universe doesn't explain itself. There's nothing in the universe that points towards its own necessity. And then you would show, what does it mean for there to be a necessary explanation of the universe? It can't just be another universe like ours that explains us, because then the argument starts all over again. Does that universe explain itself, or is it explained by something else? Rather, there has to be an ultimate and final explanation, which would be a necessary being without limit, or what we call God. So that, in a nutshell, would be the contingency argument, that since the universe does not have to exist, there must be something that must exist that explains why it does exist.
Now, what are some of the most common objections that atheists level against the argument from contingency, and how would you respond?
Well, essentially, most atheists will object to this argument, I think, one in three ways. Atheists who don't consider the argument that carefully may try to rush to the conclusion that the universe is necessary, or just, oh, well, the universe explains itself. But the problem is most philosophers and scientists don't accept this view. I've even read several atheist bloggers who say, well, that's not really a good option to say the universe is necessary, because there's nothing in the universe that points to it being necessary, that it has to exist. I mean, every part of the universe seems as though it could fail. Stars go out of existence, planets go out of existence. There's nothing in our universe that points towards it needing to exist. Even the fundamental particles like quarks, which are smaller than electrons, smaller than atoms, there's no reason to think that quarks have to exist. Couldn't they have been different? Maybe they could have been strings, like in string theory. So most scientists believe the universe could be different, and there needs to be an explanation for that. The second option, the challenge that someone may take this argument, is just to deny one of the main principles the argument rests on, which is called the principle of sufficient reason. Someone may say, well, maybe the universe has no explanation for its existence. It's just there, and that's all. That's what Bertrand Russell, a famous atheist in the 20th century, said. So maybe they'll deny the principle of sufficient reason. Maybe things can happen, can exist without an explanation. And it's at this point the theist will have to say, well, no, I think there are good reasons to think the principle of sufficient reason is true, that whatever exists has some kind of explanation for its existence, either in itself or outside of itself. For example, if the principle of sufficient reason was not true, then you couldn't have inference to the best explanation. You couldn't explain things. For example, Sherlock Holmes, the fictional detective, once said, when you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. But the problem is for Holmes that, let's say we eliminate the impossible, there's an improbable explanation or no explanation. Why not just pick no explanation? So we couldn't do inference to the best explanation because we always have no explanation as a valid option. Plus, if PSR, if this principle weren't true, why don't we see more violations of it? Why don't we see things coming into and going out of existence for no reason at all? So I think there's good evidence to believe that the PSR, the principle of sufficient reason, is true. And this follows in showing that there must be a necessary explanation or being that explains the universe. And then I think the theist will have to explain more, well, what is this necessary being? And say, well, it's not some kind of cosmic toaster. It has to be something that exists without limit, explains itself, has no boundaries, is infinite, and that would lead to God. And I explain much more about this in chapter 8 of my book, because I think that it's an interesting argument, and it's an argument that doesn't get a lot of attention online. It's sort of the redheaded stepchild. I sometimes think online, when there are these cosmological arguments that show God created the universe, the Kalam argument, which says God created the universe out of nothing, it's like the attractive sister everybody wants to talk about. But the contingency argument is kind of that redheaded stepchild everybody forgets. But it's still a very powerful argument that I enjoy teaching others about.
Now, you mentioned some of the characteristics of this transcendent creator, or this non-contingent being, that you can deduce from the argument from contingency. However, one thing that it's difficult to ascertain through that argument is whether this non-contingent being is good. And so for that, you turn to the argument from morality, or the moral argument. And so how does this argument for God run?
Well, the moral argument is kind of a family of arguments. There's no one argument. But essentially what the moral argument says is that there are these things called objective moral truths, or there are real moral truths that exist independently of human convention or human minds, and that if God didn't exist, there would be no objective moral truths. But since there are objective moral truths, some things are really right and really wrong, independent of human opinion, then it follows that God must exist as the grounding for these moral truths. God is the reason these moral truths exist and are true. And so the theist would say that God is the best explanation for this objective standard of morality, and would probably want to go on to show why atheistic foundations for morality simply don't work and couldn't work in principle.
Well, let's go there. What are some of the most common objections and challenges that atheists would bring to these moral arguments?
I think the most common objection to the argument is just a gross misunderstanding of the argument. It's when someone, even some theists may be guilty of this, when someone says that, well, without belief in God, you can't be moral. Or if God doesn't exist, everyone would just be totally immoral, and that would be a bad situation. But that's not what the argument says. People can behave morally. Or what I mean by that is they can follow personal or cultural codes of morality, even if they don't believe in God. What the theist is arguing is that you can't have objective moral truths without the existence of God. So you can't have just the truth that exists out there immaterially, that it is wrong to cause suffering just to create more suffering in the world. Now, most of us agree that that's true. But the big question is, why is it true? For example, when I say the earth revolves around the sun, that's true, and we have empirical evidence to show why it's true. But the statement, it's wrong to cause suffering just to increase suffering in the world, I'm not sure why that's true, because there's nothing within the concept of suffering that says it shouldn't happen. Science can only tell us what suffering is, when it happens, and under what conditions. It can't tell us that it shouldn't happen. So if God does not exist, you can't have these objective moral truths. And for many atheists, that's a standard out for the moral argument. People will say, well, without God, there's no objective moral truths. And you'll have atheists like J.L. Mackey, who wrote The Miracle of Theism, say, I agree. I'm just going to say there are no objective moral truths. That moral truths, what we think are objective, they're just statements of human opinion or human emotion. And that undermines the moral argument, but only if you deny something that I think most people believe is true, that some things are really wrong independent of human opinion. And I think that theists and atheists can find common ground there. I may ask many atheists, is it objectively wrong to deny same-sex couples the right to marry? Now, what's interesting here is that atheists will say, yeah, I think that's wrong. But remember, not too long ago, that was the majority view in society, that it was wrong, that it was right to deny that. So if you try to ground morality in just what society says, then you can never really go against society. And in my book, I explain more the different areas you could try to ground morality naturally that I don't think that they succeed. And then I answer arguments from those who say that God can't ground morality either.
Now let's close here with a claim that I know many Catholics watching this will have heard either from atheist friends or family members. Whenever the discussion about God comes up, inevitably you'll hear someone say, there's no evidence for God, or show me the evidence for God. How would you respond to this most common claim?
I think when someone says to me, there is no evidence for God, I'm going to ask them what they mean. Particularly, what do they mean by the word evidence? So if they mean that there's no direct empirical observation of God, that we haven't located God with a telescope or a microscope, I'll say, sure, that's correct. But the problem is there's no reason to think that everything that exists can be demonstrated by direct scientific evidence. For example, we believe that there are mathematical truths or moral truths that exist that can't be proven with science. We believe the scientific method is true, even though we have to assume it's true. It can't be proven true with an experiment. So I think I would just say to the person, well, when it comes to evidence, if we just define evidence as a good reason to think a proposition is true, or at least more likely to be true than false, then I think there's good evidence or good reasons to think God exists, such as the fact that the universe doesn't have to exist, that the universe came into being from nothing, it exhibits finely tuned laws of physics, and those objective moral truths I talked about earlier. And just to clarify for readers, I don't believe that society determines those objective moral truths. For example, even if society now believes that same-sex marriage is moral, I believe there are compelling arguments grounded in our human nature to show that same-sex marriage is not moral. So, but the atheist, the point of that example is to show to atheists that we can't just ground morality in human opinion, because then morality just becomes like fashion. It could change whenever we want. You top hats go away, top hats come back. Well, we don't think the same thing about slavery. Slavery goes away, slavery came back. That would be a degress in progress. So I would say that these reasons provide good evidence for God, and we should examine them, along with people's personal experience of God. But I also think that the atheist's job is really only half done. Even if there were no objective evidence for God, that doesn't prove atheism is true. All that would prove is that even if there was no objective evidence for God, maybe people just have personal experience of God, they couldn't prove it to other people, but I don't see why they should give up their own belief in God. Rather, the lack of evidence for God would justify being an agnostic, someone who doesn't know if God exists or not. Much the same way that the lack of evidence for aliens doesn't prove there are no aliens. It just shows that we have to be agnostics about whether aliens exist. So I would say that we should, even if you're not convinced for the evidence for God, just be an agnostic, and someone may provide you better evidence at a later time.
Well, excellent. Thanks again, Trent, for joining me and discussing some of the topics in your book. I encourage everyone to pick up a copy of Answering Atheism, How to Make the Case for God with Logic and Charity. Like I said, I highly recommend it. I think it's probably the best Catholic book out there on atheism. So if you're looking for a book on how to refute many of these most common arguments, that's the one you're going to want to pick up. Before we leave, Trent, where can people go online to find more about your writing, your speaking, and your new book?
Certainly. I would recommend that they could visit my website, trenthorn.com, or they can visit the website of the organization I work with, Catholic Answers, which is catholic.com. And you can just search for my name in the search bar, Trent Horn, and you'll see my profile and some of my blog posts and radio shows I do, including radio shows where I dialogue with atheists on the air. And if you like a copy of the book, just visit catholic.com, visit our shop, which is shop.catholic.com. And very soon, we're going to have a website devoted just to the book called answeringatheism.com. So feel free to visit answeringatheism.com to order the book, or catholic.com to learn more.
And for more interviews, articles, book reviews, and more, check out my site, brandonvaught.com. Thanks for tuning in.